This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. It is Friday. This is Enterprise Biz Bytes with me, Rich Bradbury, and of course, Arvind Yuvaraj, yet again.
Yeah, hello there.
It feels like we've just got back to work after that midweek break. Mm-hmm. But lo and behold, it's Friday again, and we're only a few hours away from the weekend. And you know, I could kind of get used to this.
Yeah, I could get used to it too. For better or worse, it's a full 5-day week next week. After 3 weeks of 4-day work weeks in a row.
Yeah,
back to back. But in any case, we have a bunch of good stories for you today. From people smuggling drugs into prison using drones, that's one, to China building mining stations on asteroids to mine for billions of dollars worth of minerals. We've got you covered. So this is starting to sound more like a tabloid, but I promise you it is not. And that being said, let's talk about 5 secret functions on the Uber app that you wish you'd known about earlier.
So that's a bit of a clickbaity enough title for everybody. Yep. Okay.
You'll never believe what happens
never
next.
Never believe what happens next, no. So yesterday, we had a little chat about how Toyota had seen a bit of a loss.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went on to talk about how some of us have chosen to use some of the apps that have popped up to enable us to use taxis and private cars and that kind of thing.
Yep.
They're relatively cheap and convenient. And personally, I've used both Uber and I've used Grab. You know, there are some functions on these apps that until now I never knew existed. So Uber is likely one of the most used apps by people in major cities around the world, KL included, of course.
Yeah, and because it's so widely used, the developers behind the app are constantly tweaking it, and according to user feedback or you know, whenever the company is introducing exciting new features, these little tweaks, though, rarely get noticed by users, and if they do, it's not right away either. So, however, these updates are actually useful once you get to know them, and they just might change the way that you use the app or, you know, indeed, your life.
Big, bold claims.
Yeah.
There. Right, so number one, okay? Mm-hmm. Clickbait title number one. Uber rider ratings. Did you know about this, like, at all? It's a feature that until recently has stayed fairly buried deep within the menus. You can actually check your rider ratings the same way how drivers have their own ratings.
Yeah, and apparently once you go into the sidebar, your rider rating will be in plain sight right under your name, and you can see how good or bad of rider you have been since you started your Uber adventure. Much like how you can rate drivers on a scale of 5 stars, they too can do the same to you. So whatever you see right now is the average of what all drivers you have ridden with have rated you.
I'm not sure how I feel about that, because I think it's a good idea knowing whether or not you're a problem customer or not.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what happens when there's a bunch of people together rating other people.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
I think I saw an episode of Black Mirror once that had that on.
Yeah!
You know?
That's terrifying.
Yeah, it is.
Oh.
Getting everyone to rate you? Yeah, no, yeah, that's not a good idea.
You can't get a job, you can't get, you know, your insurance. Or, mm-hmm. Oh, okay. So number two, Apple and Android Pay. If, for whatever reason, you don't feel comfortable with Uber having your credit card details, you can actually use Apple Pay and Android Pay as a payment option for your rides, depending on your smartphone's capability or compatibility with these payment platforms. Not entirely sure, though, if this is available in all locations, so do check.
Yep, and to be able to make payments via these routes, you first need to key in your credit card details into the wallet of your Google or Apple accounts. Once you've settled through all the various authentication procedures that are required by your bank, then you're good to go. Just know that you will need to go through the extra step of biometric authentication, mostly through your fingerprint sensor, every time you book a ride. A smart addition, this is a pretty smart thing to do with this authentication, making things even more convenient.
Now, this one for me is the most important, though. Lost and found.
Mm-hmm.
This one's for anyone, including me, who's ever left behind something in a car, never to see it again. There's actually this little feature within the Uber app that you can turn to for the times when you do leave your belongings behind in a car. I did that. I was in Vietnam. I'd booked a cab. It took me to the airport, and I got to the airport, and I'd left my phone in the cab. I'm like, what do I do? I don't speak a word of Vietnamese. There's no way I can track my phone from here.
Mm-hmm.
I managed to speak to, thankfully, one of the guys who was on the desk handling the, of all companies, Air Asia flights in and out. And I said to this guy, look, I'm on this next flight. This cab driver, I've left my phone in the cab.
Mm-hmm.
He called them up, and within 5 minutes, they were there.
The guy, and you got your phone back.
I got my phone back. The guy said, all you need to do is pay for the fare for him coming to drop off your phone. That's it. Done. Brilliant.
Wow. And why is this a secret feature? I feel like this should be a more mainstream feature.
It should
feature,
be right like, up at the top.
In the homepage, yeah. So how you get help is pretty simple. Go to your trips, select the trip that you lost something, and scroll down to the bottom until you see the I lost an item option. Tap that and continue to the contact my driver about a lost item. You will then be prompted to leave a phone number for your driver to contact you and contact you if and when your belongings are found. Number four is privacy settings. That's another one that's kind of secretive. Recently, Uber also rolled out some much-needed updates to privacy options with its own standalone section within their app.
Okay, so what we're going to do is move on a little bit further on. So privacy settings there, we're going to move on to this thing called dropping pins on the map.
Okay.
For those of you that are already concerned with your privacy and don't really want your driver to know exactly where you live, there's a special little function just for you.
Yeah, and in an update that rolled out in mid-April, Uber introduced a function called Cross Streets. It is a way for riders to arrange a pickup point between two states without explicitly sharing their exact addresses, such as those of a home or an office. If you cannot get this feature to work, fret not. You still have the good old pin on the map. When booking a ride, simply drag the map around until the pin in the middle of the screen lands at your desired location.
Okay, so this is just one of the ways in which Uber is helping to keep your information private, on top of just keeping your phone numbers anonymous whenever calls are made through the app. Uber also doesn't disclose your identity to the drivers if you report an issue with your ride. Now, there are some bad drivers, but the same can be said of riders, and all you need to do to make a driver's day better. A little words of encouragement after
just
a ride.
Just be nice.
And sticking with all things digital, onto our next story, it's all about Lazada.
Yeah, so moving on from one online service platform to another, Lazada Malaysia is now offering offline payment in stores all over the country.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Leading online store then, Lazada Malaysia, is offering customers offline payment services in stores nationwide through its partnership with 7-Eleven Malaysia and its strategic partner and technology provider for in-store payment services, MOL Pay Malaysia. Chief Executive Officer Hans-Peter Ressel said this would allow payment flexibility for customers through offline transactions.
Yeah, and the logic behind this is that some customers prefer cash on delivery, some prefer online transactions, and all the other customers like to pick up their items there and there in the store. Lazada is trying to cater their services to different types of customers, and the partnership is a strategic fit because it leverages on 7-Eleven and MOL Pay's individual strengths.
Right.
Yeah, and Lazada viewed this as an alternative payment option for online shoppers.
Okay, smart idea. And through this collaboration, Lazada will enable Malaysians to shop for over 12 million items available on their website, as if there isn't enough things to buy already, by combining the familiarity of paying over-the-counter at any 7-Eleven store nationwide.
Yeah, and it makes sense why they chose 7-Eleven, because it is the number one convenience store chain in the country with more than 2,150 stores, serving over 900,000 customers every single day. So they have the traffic and the convenience of having a 7-Eleven at every corner for people to make their payments offline.
Easy peasy. 7-Eleven's Chief Executive Officer Gary Brown said there was a tremendous increase in Lazada's customer payments in 7-Eleven stores as customers preferred to hand out their cash and receive their items. Hence, he believes that it is important for them to keep up with the hottest trends as well as introduce new products and services that would garner further attraction and leave a positive impact on their customers.
Yeah, so we actually had Gary Brown on a segment of Rockin' Retail Episode 3 on Monday, and he actually touched on some retail strategies that 7-Eleven employs and how they're, you know, leveraging on this whole online-offline phenomenon. And coincidentally, we'll have Hans-Peter Ressel, you know, the CEO of Lazada Malaysia, live on stage at Enterprise Rocks next Monday, May 15, to, you know, really get into the online trends and the balance between online and offline.
There's not many tickets left for that event, is
there?
Yeah,
very few left.
Right, it's going to be an event not to be missed. Get your tickets at bfm.my/rocks. We're going to get some music and some messages in now, but when we do come back, we'll be talking about a man who smuggled drugs into a prison. It's not a new thing. Mm-hmm. This time, though, he did it with a drone. This is Enterprise Biz Bytes on BFM 89.9.
Bankers, financiers, and moneymakers. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes with me, Rich, and sat across from me is Arvin.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's a headline that I didn't think that I'd be saying anytime soon, but it just goes to show where there's a will, there's a way. A man has been charged with using drones to smuggle drugs into a prison.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So this guy, his name is Michael Tovey. Of course, he is English. Is being accused of using two drones to fly cannabis, steroids and mobile phones into Her Majesty's Prison, Birmingham, in the UK last year.
It's a story about resourcefulness.
Right.
Yes. You know? So he allegedly dropped the contraband into an exercise yard on October 29 and November 6, 2016. And now he faces a total of 13 counts of conveying banned items into prison and is said to appear at Birmingham Magistrates Court on June 7th. So he didn't just do it once, by the way. He realized that he got away with it the first few times and then he continued to do it.
Dude, this is like some kind of scene out of a movie, you know?
Yeah.
You're going to be flying in keys and stuff and like lockpicks and no, but
and when you watch those scenes, you think, no, this is not
this
possible.
Would never
yeah,
happen.
Someone would notice
right.
a drone dropping stuff in
right.
your courtyard.
I mean, but this is the thing. You imagine that in like the American movies that you imagine, you see these guards on posts, you know, with their guns. And you see this drone flying, and they shoot. English guards don't have guns. You know, they're just going to have to look at it going, what is that? Anyway, so in December of last year, Her Majesty's Prison Birmingham was hit by a large-scale disorder, and several inmates were left charged with offences of prison mutiny.
Mm-hmm.
I did not know that they called it prison mutiny.
Or they still called it mutiny at all, right?
Yeah.
So this mutiny affected four wings of the prison and involved up to 500 inmates, reportedly causing approximately £3 million worth of damage.
Now, if they're smuggling in cannabis, you'd think they'd be more chilled out about it. But if they're smuggling in steroids, you can understand why.
So it's you know, it's a conflicting effect.
It is, yeah.
And the UK prison minister Sam Gyimah said in a statement in April, "We are absolutely determined to tackle the flow of illegal drugs and mobile phones into our prisons and turn them into places of safety and reform." But obviously, with drones coming in, I don't think that's the case.
They just put those nets up, shouldn't they? You know, like you just keep birds out. Anyway, he went on to add, "The threat posed by drones is clear, but our dedicated staff are committed to winning the fight against those who are attempting to thwart progress by wreaking havoc in establishments all over the country. My message to those who involve themselves in this type of criminal activity is clear. We will find you and put you behind bars."
Very Liam Neeson there.
You're right?
Yeah. And John Podmore, who's the former head of the UK Prison Services Anti-Corruption Unit, told the BBC, "There are some 10,000 mobile phones found every year." 10,000 mobile phones.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, it's like they're just using WhatsApp and, you know, talking with their friends from in there. My question to the prison services would be, how many of those were found hanging from drones?
Now, I think the kind of reading between the lines of that is, where else are they hiding them?
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what's worrying.
It's in the prison somewhere.
Yeah. But they've got to get into the prison first. That's what's... don't even want to think about that. Anyway, this story is not the first time this has been an issue. There have been some recent examples of punishing those responsible for drone flights, say the Ministry of Justice.
Yeah, so true. Back in December, another guy was jailed for 4 years and 8 months after he used a drone to smuggle drugs and mobile phones into Manchester prison.
Like I said, where there's a will, there's a way, right?
Obviously, yeah.
Okay, anyway, stick with us. And when we come back, we'll be talking about new business opportunities in space. You are listening to Enterprise BizBytes on BFM 89.9.
Beyond frivolous mishmash, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to Enterprise BizBytes with me, Rich, and Arvin. Right. Listen to this. The asteroid mining race is expected to heat up this century. Okay, in an effort to mine precious metals potentially worth trillions of dollars and aid interstellar travel, China has unveiled plans to build a base on an asteroid likely to happen in, quotes, in the near future.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure it'll happen way sooner than we expect.
Let's hope so.
Yeah. Right. So Yi Peijian, the chief commander and designer of the Chinese Lunar Exploration Program, revealed details that could potentially put an unmanned craft on an asteroid and mine the rock for minerals like palladium, platinum, and others that are used in items such as smartphones and cars. He's basically saying, in the near future, we will study ways to send robots or astronauts to mine suitable asteroids and transport the resources back to Earth. So these are moving rocks in space.
We've landed on them, though.
We have.
Right?
We have before, yeah.
Now, Earlier this year, Peijian said that China could conduct one exploration mission between 2020 and 2025, though further details such as the exact date or the asteroid are not known yet. Mm-hmm. Not only would the asteroid serve as basis for missions and help with interstellar exploration, as Peijian noted, but the economic impact of mining the asteroids could be worth trillions of dollars. Of course, this is according to Goldman Sachs.
And speaking of Goldman Sachs, analyst Noah Poponak.
His name is what?
Noah Poponak.
Okay.
Noah Poponak noted that one asteroid could have as much as $50 billion worth of platinum, as well as water and other precious resources. Water and platinum group metals that are abundant on asteroids and are highly disruptive from a technological and economic standpoint.
Now,
I was just going to say, I love how things get rushed and pushed forward when there's $50 billion involved in the operation.
Right, but we were talking the other day, right, about NASA's budget, wasn't we? And we said at one point they were 4% of the national budget, and now they're 0.4%. Mm-hmm. But when you have somebody saying there's potentially $50 billion worth of just platinum on one asteroid, suddenly things start to spice up a little bit.
Yep, and the gears start to work way faster, right?
Wow. So according to a 2012 Reuters interview with Planetary Resources, a single asteroid the size of a football field could contain $25 to $50 billion worth of platinum. And NASA has said for several years that it wants to mine asteroids for minerals as well. And back in January of this year, NASA said the spacecraft Psyche could be used to study and potentially mine 16 Psyche, which is an asteroid thought to be the remains of a dead planet, right?
Yeah. And of course, in 2016, Jeff Bezos revealed plans for his space company Blue Origin and noted that all heavy industry would move to space, which would include asteroid mining, sometime in the next few hundred years. He even said that he wanted to have a delivery to space stations, and he wanted Amazon's delivery, like same-day delivery service, maybe like same six-month delivery service or same-year delivery delivery service to and fro from space stations and other planets.
At least in the same century, that'd be nice, you know. But the whole idea of the privatization of space, so now, I mean, that's what it's become, because it's become so prohibitive to get things into space. So you've got to have some enormous payoff at some point to make it worth its while, right?
Yeah. And I used to joke that the first thing we'll see on the moon is a Starbucks.
I wouldn't be surprised either.
It's Amazon, so why not?
Yeah. Right. We're going to get some music and some messages in. And when we come back, we'll talk about quick tips, tricks, and cheats. For those of you who still have no idea what to do for Mother's Day, quick reminder, it is this weekend. Mm-hmm. You're listening to Enterprise Biz Bytes on BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Busy following money trail. BFM 89.9.
This is Enterprise Biz Bytes with me, Rich, and Arvin.
It is.
Now, I'm sure many of you out there have forgotten Mother's Day before. Mm-hmm. Have you, Arvin, ever forgotten Mother's Day?
Oh, I'm not gonna say it. It's a dangerous thing to admit.
I'd be a dead man if I'd ever forgotten. But if you haven't, you know, or you just haven't had the time to cook up something special for your mum or significant other, but maybe you should mark this day down in your calendar, because some mums can get really, really upset if expectations are not met on Mother's Day.
Oh, yeah. This is going to get dark and weird
at
the same time. Yeah. So what are we talking about? Well, while we were looking for Mother's Day last-minute cheat deals online, we came across a couple of articles talking about just that, Mother's Day cheats, like actual cheats. So listen to this. Cheating website AshleyMadison.com. I'm sure no one listening knows what that's about.
Claims
that there is always a spike in sign-ups by moms the day after Mother's Day. And we're not talking about a marginal increase here. We're talking about 400% jump in signups on the Monday after Mother's Day.
Hang on a minute. Yeah. What?
400% on the Monday after Mother's Day compared to any other Monday of the year.
Oh my word. Right. Okay. If you haven't heard of the Ashley Madison website, well, good for you. Mm-hmm. The website actually calls itself the most famous name in infidelity and married dating. Hey, and it boasts some, get this, 26 million members across 35 countries. Why are mums signing up for online infidelity the day after Mother's Day?
Yeah, so, you know, this is what analysts say. And by the way, Ashley Madison is proof that, you know, you can make a business out of anything at all. So analysts and experts say that this is because when expectations aren't met, it can often be the last straw to trigger an affair.
My word.
Okay, so they add that whilst Mother's Day might not have the implicit romance factor of Valentine's Day or an anniversary, it's a holiday that compels women to reflect on their relationships. They expect to be recognized for their hard work throughout the year, whether it's with a relaxing afternoon at the spa or bringing some much needed romance to the bedroom.
Right. So Mother's Day isn't the only trigger for mums, apparently. Husbands, beware of January 2nd and February 15th. These days, the days after the New Year and, of course, after Valentine's Day.
Yeah, so there's a lot of eggshells to walk on after this year. So now that we know how crucial it is to impress your wife or mom on Mother's Day, here's what you can do to make her day special. If you haven't already planned, you know, something yet, let's kick things off with the cheap options.
Kicking off with the cheap options. Good start.
Yeah. Didn't have time to buy mom flowers? Take her to the KL Orchid Park. It's right across the road from the KL Bird Park, and you can take mom there for just $1. That's the entrance fee. Can't take flowers to mama? Just take mama to the flowers.
Right. ₹1.
Yeah.
You cheapskate. You could also just take mom for...
It's the orchids that count. It's the orchids that count.
All right. You could also just take mum for a walk in the park, right? If I took my mum for a walk in the park, I know what she'd say. Get her to put on her walking shoes and spend some quality time together chatting about family and life. And many parks, of course, in the greater KL region where you can do this. TTDI Park, Desa Park City, Taman Perdana KL. Just pick the one closest to you and enjoy your mum's company.
Out in nature.
Yeah.
A survey done in the UK found that what 53% of mums want most is help with housework like cooking or cleaning.
Yeah.
So this Mother's Day, instead of giving her something she really doesn't need, help around the house, you know, like vacuum, clean the washrooms, clear out the garden shed, you know what I mean, just make her a cup of tea and get to work.
And if you have a bit of time tomorrow, maybe you could put together a quick photo montage of you and your siblings, perhaps. Nothing like going down memory lane with mum, just to let her know how awesome she is, and she has you as kids, of course.
Yeah, and of course there's a breakfast in bed. Cereal doesn't count. I'm talking about actual breakfast in bed. And make the pancakes good, because according to this survey that we just talked about,
right?
Yeah, now you have to make sure that the cooking's really, really good. Otherwise,
there's so much pressure.
Yeah, there is so much pressure.
Wow.
And you know, if all else fails and you have to buy her something, here are some interesting gift ideas. You can get a journal. There's a wind chime. I got my mom a wind chime when I was 12 from the bird park. Yeah. And it's been hanging in the house ever since. Yeah, she loved it. Gardening tools, house plants, fancy flip flops, lotions, a framed family portrait, gift vouchers. Family portrait seems like a bit of a cop-out. Like
you've really done your research on this.
And vouchers for a cooking class, but please be very, very, very careful here. You don't want her thinking that her cooking isn't good. And if all else fails, get mama a bottle of wine.
Of course. Yeah. Right. I remember my dad many years ago, and he would go down the same route every year on Mother's Day. It would be her favorite bottle of wine. He would cook her breakfast in bed. And of course, he would buy her a brand new robe each year.
Every year.
And one year she said to him, you know, why don't you get me something a little bit more creative, a little bit more inventive? And he just said to her, why change the habit of a lifetime?
Yeah, if it's not broken, why fix it?
Right. Yeah, well, I don't know. They were married for an awful long time as well. Right. It's time for us to wrap up Biz Bytes for today. But before we go, and since it's Friday, here are some notable enterprise podcasts that you should catch up with on this weekend. We kick the week off with our final Rocking Retail episode on Monday, episode number 3, featuring Gary Brown, who's the CEO at 7-Eleven Malaysia, Vivian Yap, Marketing Director at Tesco Malaysia, Lizette Shears, founder of Nala Designs, and Christy Ung, founder of Christy Ung Shoes, and learning from their respective retail segments.
Yep, and if you find you're still yearning for more lessons from these retail gurus, then come join us at Enterprise Rocks, the event happening on Monday, May 15, at Nexus Connection, Bangsa South. It's BFM's first retail conference, and we're showcasing some of the big guns in the retail industry, including Lazada, KFIT, Pestle & Mortar, Faruni, and many more. Christy Ng and Lizette Shears will also be there. If you haven't got your tickets yet, they are selling out super fast. Just visit bfm.my/rocks for more details.
That Then on your weekend playlist, you should probably listen to the best marketing case study ever, which we aired on Tuesday. Angeline Day spoke to marketing guru David Meerman Scott, who followed the US presidential election for 18 months, and he explains the very different methods in which the presidential candidates communicated with their potential voters and how Trump's campaign was the best marketing case study ever.
Yep. And finally, if you missed Five for Fortune at 11 a.m. just a couple of hours ago, I spoke about the five big brands that are actually Malaysian. I did this because I was walking around a mall and then I was looking at different outlets and different stores, and I was wondering which of them were Malaysian and which were not. And I found out that some things like San Francisco Coffee were actually Malaysian.
No.
Yeah, I had no idea. I thought it was actually from San Francisco.
Right.
Yeah, but apparently not. So that started me off on like a 10-point list of brands that look international and worldwide but are actually founded here in Malaysia.
Those sneaky marketers. Mm-hmm. Right. All these podcasts can, of course, be found on our website, bfm.my, and the BFM mobile app, available now on the App Store and Google Play. Up next, it is the Breakfast Grill replay. Truong managed to speak to Michael J. Lambert from the Federal Reserve. Should be a good one.
Very interesting.
Right. From myself and, of course, Arvind Ubaraj, here's wishing all the mums out there a wonderful Mother's Day weekend. And the rest of you a nice one, too. Don't be a cheapskate. Spend more than one ringgit. Anyway, you have been listening to Enterprise Biz Bytes. Bye-bye, folks.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.